Quinnell, reel two.
What was the food like?
Quite good.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, quite good.
But a little repetitive.
It was the primitive, so it was so primitive. That was the, it was quite a novelty to us. We took it all as good fun. Mm. We didn't complain about it.
And after dinner, how did you spend the afternoons?
Oh, there was no feet up then. It was out on the parade ground again. And you would learn then how the various hand signals. For instance, when you're in the army, you have to learn various hand signals. This is advance. This is extend. Extend on the center, that. Extend to the right. Extend to the left. And you have to learn all those things.
When we talked last, I believe you said that most of the afternoon was spent in trying to get your kit issued.
Yes, that came along at irregular intervals. There was no regular time for kit. As the stuff came in to the quartermaster stores, the quartermaster storeman would come out to the various platoons and say to the sergeant, "Your platoon for kit, sergeant," and you would march over to the quartermaster stores, and the quartermaster would come out and would say, "I want you, in other words, he'd got tunics for those men, or boots for them, or trousers for them, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So that was the way we were kitted out.
Now, after this period of 2 or 3 weeks at Hounslow, you went on to Colchester. This would be sometime in September 1914.
Yes, early September.
When you got to Colchester, were you then completely equipped?
No.
Well, describe what happened as far as kitting out, exactly what you were issued with and in what kind of way.
Well, as we marched to the station, the people in Hounslow, of course, I expect they'd seen it before, but as we marched to the station, we were really a motley throng. Some of the chaps had bowler hats, some had straw hats, some had the regulation peaked army cap. Some would have tunics, some would be dressed with their ordinary jackets, with a pair of army trousers. Some had army boots, some didn't. And we really were a motley throng. We had no weapons, of course. But at any rate, we entrained and we got to Colchester. And when we marched from Colchester Station to the barracks, we were objects of great surprise to the people because they'd never seen anything like it before.
Did you get any particular reactions from the people?
Yes, plenty of laughs.
Yeah.
We laughed back.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about Colchester a bit. I'd like to try and break it down into particular subjects. So if we could concentrate, first of all, on this question of kitting out and explain to me exactly what you were now issued with and in what kind of fashion.
Yeah. When we got to Colchester, we marched into Mearney Barracks. And for the first time, we were we were 16 to a room, which was the regulation number, and it's meant for greater comfort. We each had a bed. We each were issued with two blankets, and then as far as the kit was concerned, the supplies were now coming in far better, far better. And within about 3 weeks, pretty well every man was in khaki. One of the things we had to learn, which is very tricky to the newcomer, is putting on putties. You know what I mean by putties?
Yeah.
Here again, the old soldiers came in very useful to us. They showed us, if you start right, you can't go wrong. But if you don't start right, You make a mess of it.
How do you do it exactly?
Well, you find out there's no standard. You've got to find out what suits your legs, because some men's legs are longer than others, some are fatter than others, some are thinner than others. You find out what suits you. It's where you start. Now, I used to start there.
Where?
There.
Right at the ankle.
Yeah, right there. Round, finish there. Because in the infantry, your trousers come up there, and then they loop over the tops of your putties like that. Mm. Follow that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, putties were of great support to the legs, especially in marching.
Fine, carry on. You're saying about
putties. Putties are a great support to the legs. They were issued to us because going through rough brushwork, for instance, bushy countries and that, they prevent the legs from being damaged too. But the main reason for putties were to support the legs in marching.
Mm-hmm. What else? I'd like you to try and describe the equipment issue that you got at Colchester, yeah. What it consisted of.
We now were issued with webbing equipment, and very, very efficient it was. You were handed the equipment in separate pieces, the two braces for a start, then the pack.
The braces came over the shoulders, didn't they?
Braces came over the shoulder, front, fore and aft, front of the body and the back of the body. There were on the back, the pack was carried. On the right hand side, the haversack. On the left hand side was the bayonet scabbard and the entrenching tool handle and water bottle. At the back here, under the pack, was a case for the entrenching tool. An iron miniature shovel at one end and the pick at the other end. That went in the case there. Now, the pack was for everything that you owned. The overcoat, and that overcoat had to be folded very, very neatly and tightly to go into the pack. There was a housewife with the needles, thread, spare buttons, knife, fork, spoon, razor brush, shaving brush, toothbrush, and also a half pint mug. And they were your, and that was your kit. One spare shirt and one spare pair of socks.
This rather complicated arrangement of webbing, when you were first issued with it, did you find it at all difficult to put on?
That's where the old soldier came in very, very useful again.
What were the problems to a newcomer like yourself?
Well, you wouldn't know where your haversack went or where your water bottle went, or where the entrenching tool went and so forth. But it was a very, very efficient... Oh, in the front here, to counterbalance the weight of the pack, you had your ammunition pouches on both sides of the chest. And eventually, when we were on active service, those pouches carried 150 rounds of .303 ammunition.
Yeah. Did you find that all the equipment you were issued with was of a good quality?
Very, very good indeed.
What about the little things like toothbrushes and razors? Were they okay?
Well, the razor, the army razor with which we were issued was absolutely useless. But it came in handy for cutting up meat and so forth. The toothbrush, that came in handy for cleaning buttons. One of the peculiarities about the army was that although it was a crime to have dirty buttons. You were never issued with a button stick. You know what I mean by a button stick? You were never issued with a button stick. You were never issued with a brush to put the polish on, and you were never issued with the materials to clean the buttons with. You had to buy them yourself. So you had to buy a button stick. You had the toothbrush that you were supposed to clean your teeth with. You used that for putting the button polish on.
Yeah.
And the razor, well, you had to buy your own razor too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It must, I imagine, have been... You must have felt like a pack mule when you were first issued with this stuff, and you put it all on, and before you got used to wearing it.
One of the expressions we used to have, what is a soldier for? To hang things on.
Yes. I think when we were talking last time, you explained to me that the essence of putting on the pack and all of the webbing was made possible by what you described as the broken D.
Broken D.
Could you go over that piece for me again? Tell me how that worked.
Yeah. Attached to the braces were several metal broken Ds. Now, these broken Ds were in various sizes. For instance, on the pack, there were two tags, capped with a small metal plate. At the side, the haversack had smaller broken Ds. Now, these were pieces of metal. Just imagine a D. And then take out a half an inch on one side out of the centre, and there's your broken D. And you fix these tags through one side and out the other, and you could not pull them apart. And it was a simple piece of equipment, but very, very efficient. You could hang your pack on there, and it never fell off. The same words apply to the haversack and the water bottle.
Now, we talked about kitting out. I'd like to talk a little bit now about accommodation at the barracks at Hounslow.
Yes. Not Hounslow, Colchester.
Sorry, Colchester. Yeah. How big were the barracks here, and how many did you have to each room?
The barracks at Colchester were very comfortable indeed. Here again, the layout was similar to Hounslow. They were built at the beginning of this century, after the Boer War. In addition to the barrack rooms, which were in lines, for example, you've got one platoon would be in one line, and then there was a space of 30 or 40 yards and a similar barrack room and so on and so on until the whole battalion. The strength of the battalion was just over 1,000. Mm-hmm. And in between each barrack room was a dining room. By now we are issued with knife, fork, spoon, plate, and mug. Mm-hmm. Enamel plate, mm-hmm. enamel mug, which you took with you each time you went to the dining room. And by now, the quartermaster had organised things very well indeed, and the food at Colchester was excellent.
What would you have? You'd have three meals a day, would you?
Yes.
What were they, and what kind of food would you have for each?
Breakfast consisted of bread, butter, one rasher of, we call it Lance Corporal Bacon. The reason we call it Lance Corporal Bacon was it was streaky bacon, it had one stripe in it, you see. Lance Corporal Bacon, and marmalade. Lunch would consist of inevitable stew. Now, we have to remember that the chaps who were in the cookhouse were by no means experienced cooks, but anybody can make a stew, and that's what they did. We had more stews than any other kind of meat. But now and again, perhaps once a week, we would have a roast. Potatoes and greens, or perhaps swede. And then for tea, this was the autumn. It was September and beginning of October. And salads were plentiful, and for teas we had plenty of lettuce and tomatoes, spring onions and so forth. Mm. And that